At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
JP Cadoran is back in the house for this week's edition of Initial Pod. Whoa, what is our
podcast? Initial Podcast Initial Reaction. Podcast. And technically, you're in our house.
Oh, that's true.
You are visiting. I've always been in this house. You are back in the house.
My name is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers. After my podcast hiatus from JP Cadoran of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, I've decided that he is back on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It means a lot for you to include me on the podcast that I helped start with you.
Would we call that a one podcast suspension, like Diamond Stone style?
No. I was on assignment.
You were on assignment. That's right. Well played.
Which didn't come in handy when I actually could have used a week on assignment to actually work on stuff.
Yeah.
But here I am.
Here you are. Your Iowa Hawkeyes have struggled lately, and partially because of the Wisconsin Badgers, and
sure,
we want to talk about that. We could talk a little bit about the Marquette Golden Eagles. They had a really big win against Georgetown. We won't talk long about them because they are not going to the NCAA tournament, but their big man getting hurt, which is a little bit of a concern, and a big game from Luke Fisher of Germantown High School, which coincidentally Germantown High School will be making their run for a fifth consecutive state tournament. I'm going to talk to some of my colleagues at Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers about the upcoming boys basketball tournament. Well, technically it's already underway, but kicking into high gear on Friday and Saturday of this week. And we can talk about the Bucks, JP. We can talk about whatever you want.
You just covered like seven things.
I know. Let's just get going.
Let's talk about Marquette out of the way. Some people still bring them up like they have a chance to make the tournament. And I don't see that happening in any way, shape, or form without a conference tournament championship.
They do have a chance to make the Big East tournament. I really think they're going to do it. I think they're going to go.
Someone's got jokes over here.
I'm fired up today, maybe.
Attaboy.
Yeah, no one, I seriously think they're going to make it without winning the Big East tournament, which may have been a possibility if Henry Ellenson were healthy, but I had some serious concern after seeing him fall in the Georgetown game, which was a fun game that came out of the wire. Serious concern that his ankle's all busted up now.
So instead of chanting one more year, they should have been chanting just one more game.
Hoping that
out of him, waiting for that update. So,
is there any scenario you can see where Henry Ellenson comes back to Marquette?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think the latest mock I saw, I'm trying to think if it was him or Diamond Stone that I was looking at, was 18th. I think Stone is 18th. I think Ellenson's a little higher than that, but this injury might derail that, first of all. I mean, if it's anything serious, then there's obviously a huge problem. But even if it's minor and teams are a little questionable about it, I could see that making his stock drop a little bit. And college is pretty fun. I mean, I always go back to Frank Kaminsky staying pretty much just because he wanted to stay in college one more year. A little bit of unfinished business, too. And this Marquette team's going to be pretty good next year.
Very good.
I mean, that it would be reason enough for most people to stay. So I can see it. I'm not betting on it, but I can see it.
It just always blows my mind. I mean, what fans think is pretty irrelevant to me. Blows my mind that a kid would turn down an opportunity. Because let's say he's a year or two away, which I don't think is an unfair thing to say about him, a year or two away from being a major NBA contributor. I don't know if he is or isn't, but even if he is, why do you stay in college and risk getting hurt and not getting that paycheck while you're learning? I mean, how many NBA players have been sort of bench warmers or in the D League and then after a year or two blossom into a quality NBA basketball player? I would want on-the-job training. I would not want to be doing that at Marquette, especially because after 1 year, I mean, how much affinity can you gain for your college program? I mean, I know that he's a Marquette Golden Eagle, but he's only been that way for a few months. I mean, how much affinity is going to bring him back to Marquette's campus for another year when he'd be risking so much to do it? I just don't see that as a realistic expectation for a guy of his caliber.
I do think he is going to go pro, but I don't think it's as open and shut as you have presented it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not ready for the NBA right now. at all.
Right. Everyone knows that. But again, it's not about whether you are or not. It's about whether you will get drafted and get a lot of on the job.
Because the lottery right now is just like claiming dibs on guys.
Right.
It's just saying like, nope, we get Ellenson. We're going to stash him either on our bench, on our D-League team, or in Europe or something for a couple years until he's ready.
Yes.
But also, I mean, you mentioned how many guys have waited 2-3 years and blossomed into this star. There's way more guys that came out too early and then
flamed out, and then
coaches didn't have the patience. And then they bounce around between teams and they never get their full shot because they weren't ready. So
I suppose. I think it's easier to isolate on those guys because the home fan base is recognizing, oh, you made a mistake, when in reality a lot of those guys would have been bad NBA players anyway later. So,
sure,
And then they get paid to be bad NBA players. So, for the school, there's no question what would benefit Marquette. For the individual, I just don't see a downside to going to the NBA. I mean, I guess you could argue
that. Well, he could be higher. So let's say he goes 10th this year.
Sure.
He could be number one pick next year.
Maybe.
With that comes marketing, notoriety, a higher paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, there are certain things in it for him.
You're right.
You know, if he becomes an All-American next year.
Speaking of marketing, so when LSU's Ben Simmons, LSU's not going to go to the NCAA tournament probably.
Yeah.
When Ben Simmons does anything, everybody's talking about how great Ben Simmons is. He's seen as the presumed number one pick in the draft. So I get why there's a little bit of fascination. But there seems to be a preponderance of coverage for Ben Simmons on a team that's not going to the tournament. Henry Ellenson last night sprains badly, probably an ankle. I don't know what the injury is, but it sure looked like that. And nobody's saying anything about it. I mean, Henry Ellenson is a legitimate freshman of the year candidate in college basketball. He won't get it, but he's legitimately a freshman of the year candidate. I'm just amazed at the disparity, and I'm not trying to cry about why one team gets more coverage than the local team. I get that that happens. That's fine, but I'm surprised that there's almost crickets for a guy like Henry Ellenson going down. If Ben Simmons twisted his ankle and went out, I mean, that would be a lead story on ESPN.
Well, I think part of that gets into the way that ESPN operates.
Yeah,
and
that's, I know, the star-making thing.
That's a whole
that.
Problem in and of itself. And, like, they, you know, they had their big green room thing for most of the year. Then they basically got called out on it and then shut it down because it was ruining their broadcast. They were talking about who wasn't a green room guy, and that was dominating the broadcast. When in reality, people just wanted to watch North Carolina play. They didn't care about who's getting drafted yet. It was November. You know, it was December, and they were still talking about it. So there's a lot of stuff about ESPN there. But, no, I mean, Ellenson, yeah, he probably could, if the campaign was launched earlier and if it was on a better team. I mean, I still think LSU is more on the bubble than Marquette, aren't they?
I agree with that.
So I still think LSU is more of a relevant team than Marquette, and so I'm sure that has something to do with
it. Yeah, I suppose. I just I don't know if nationally people realize that this kid on a losing team is legitimately one of the best freshmen. I shouldn't say losing team, just a non-tournament team, one of the best freshmen in the nation.
Are the Badgers still on the bubble?
The Badgers were on the bubble. They lived most of the season on the bubble, and then they went ahead and jumped off the bubble into the tournament. The question now isn't whether or not they're going to make the dance. It's how many teams are they going to beat in the dance. The narrative has changed quite dramatically in what has to be the greatest coaching job in Wisconsin history. I refuse to believe that a team that lost to the last place team in the Summit League can be a top two team in the Big Ten, but honestly, that's what we're dealing with right now.
Did Wisconsin have any players on Western Illinois? You follow the state of Wisconsin. You follow our prep stars.
Oh, yeah. So, are there any Wisconsin players on Western Illinois?
Yes.
No. The women's team actually has a couple players, but not the men's
team. And the football team.
The football team has a lot of representation.
Okay.
Not so much the men's basketball team, but the Summit League, where my alma mater Valparaiso was when I was in college, is legitimately one of the worst conferences in America. I mean, it is bad, bad basketball. Western Illinois is the last team in that conference. They won their game at the Kohl Center. Honestly, this is like back when North Dakota or North Dakota State came into the Kohl Center and won in a game that wasn't even televised anywhere. This is that level of bad upset. And yet, this Wisconsin team has beaten Maryland and Iowa on the road. I think there's a little bit of an asterisk with those wins, having seen how those teams struggled after that, making me think those teams were as much the problem as Wisconsin. But you cannot argue that Wisconsin is is a tournament team, is playing out of its mind relative to where it was. I mean, how do you explain this? How, when you look back on this team, how are you going to explain how this team went from so bad to very decent?
Well, I think back in the beginning of the year, and it was Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes taking the ball and then nobody else knowing what to do. I mean, their offense was really get to 5 seconds left in the shot clock, give it to Bronson, and have him hoist up a terrible shot.
And he was
shot.
Missing everything.
It was so bad. They just literally did not have an offense. And throughout the year, Ethan Happ has developed, Vito Brown has developed, and then you found that other core of Ilkkanen, Thomas, Iverson, you know, just those other role players that all have stepped up and have their moments in certain games.
And Ethan Happ has been tremendous.
Ethan Happ is, you know, one of the freshmen of the year in the Big Ten.
He's the freshman of the year in the Big Ten.
He's all Big Ten freshman team,
yep,
at least.
For sure.
But so these guys have stepped up. And again, this is where we kind of lose sight of it, and I've been trying to get it in people's heads that, like, this is pretty much, I mean, we'll see where they finish, but this is basically what we thought Wisconsin would do.
Yeah,
everybody
right.
thought that they would be a pretty good team. They were picked 17th in the preseason polls. Everybody thought that they would be good. Nobody knew how good, whether, you know, anywhere from like 2nd to 7th, you know, which is a pretty big range, but then again, it's only one, maybe two losses that'll end up dividing 2nd place and 7th place. So this is exactly where we thought they'd be. The problem is they took a really big dip down. You know, everybody thought it would probably be a roller coaster. Nobody anticipated being that far down, though. So is it surprising? Well, not really.
I guess not, no.
You know, it's just surprised. We just got so caught up in the moment. And I remember when Dennis was out one week, I was hosting the roundtable. And at the time, the topic was, are the Badgers going to miss the NCAA tournament? We were saying, you know, this is the first time since 1998 that no team from the state is going to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And, like, everybody, you know, it wasn't even a second thought. Badgers were that bad at that time.
Right.
So that was the reality of the situation. It's not like we were being short-sighted or we were just ragging on them for no reason. They were really bad.
Right.
And they got a lot better. So credit to them for doing it. But it's not a terrible surprise. The only surprising thing is how they've done it.
Yeah. And it makes the decision to keep Greg Gard all the easier, knowing that they're going to have all these freshmen, four major contributing freshmen back next season to mix in potentially with Nigel Hayes again and Bronson Koenig again, because those guys have been good, but not maybe good enough to be a first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd like to think both of those guys will be back, and then you'll have you'll have everybody back next year, which is the same situation they ran into when they went to the Final Four. They had just tons of experience back, and they were able to make a couple runs to the tournament. Can we start the conspiracy theory that maybe they sandbagged it a little bit so that Barry would ultimately have to choose Greg Gard in the overall scheme of things?
No, although I asked this question probably a month ago, but what does this say about Bo Ryan?
Yeah.
Like, why was he not getting these results? I think it's worth thinking about. I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get killed because Bo Ryan is a freaking
right.
legend.
His the back-to-back Final Four thing and the national championship appearance, I'm cool with Bo Ryan, whatever he does. That's fine with me.
Yeah, I know.
He gets more than a couple weeks.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is strange.
That
it's
Bo Ryan
weird.
Coached this team and couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah, and I think it's just because so many contributors were freshmen. They didn't have a cohesive unit. That's a big deal in college basketball.
Yeah, and you could ask the question that if Bo Ryan stayed on, maybe these guys learn just as much and they grow just as much.
Maybe
and
they're even better. Maybe they beat Michigan State at Michigan State.
Look at you.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just throwing around theories and ideas.
Yeah.
The high school season is also in its postseason throes right now. Friday, Saturday are boys' regionals and sectionals. The girls' Thursday and Saturday are the sectionals. I should say just the boys' regionals are this weekend. But had a chance to sit down with some of my colleagues, Evan Frank, Sky Skybosh, Steve Teets, John Reck, to talk a lot about that. We also threw in a little bit of state wrestling coverage, if that's your thing. So
I just take a break?
Take a break, because I'm gonna join my friends. We'll be right back in a second. Joined once again by Evan Frank, our resident wrestling expert here at Lake Country Publications and now newspapers. Evan just came back from individual state, covered a couple state championships for Pewaukee with Jacob Rashka and Blaze Beltran winning the third and fourth title in school history. And now it's to team state, where you can sit in the far less comfortable University of Wisconsin Fieldhouse as compared to the Kohl Center up the street to check out a couple of area teams that are actually facing off with each other in the first round. Maguanago, Menominee Falls are meeting in the state quarterfinal on Friday night in Madison. And my sense, Evan, is that Maguanago is going to be favored to win this. They've got two state finalists in their lineup, a lot of depth. Menominee Falls has its share of state qualifiers, including one state finalist, kind of a surprise state finalist, and Eric Wunsch. But I'm kind of coming into this thinking Maguanago is going to be the better team. Tell me if that's accurate. I mean, should I expect Maguanago to win that match, or is Menominee Falls going to be more dangerous than I'm giving them credit for?
I agree with you. I think Maguanago is definitely the favorite coming into the match. They are number four in the state, actually, which was not expected coming into the year, at least not that high in the state. And they had a lot of very good dual meet wins over the season, especially at the Zielinski Memorial Invitational earlier this season in late January, where they beat Stoughton and Sauk Prairie, who were very highly ranked at the time. So Maguanago is a very, very deep dual meet team, and I want to put an emphasis on very deep because against Pewaukee, who at the time was one of the better teams in the area, they beat Pewaukee actually twice, but in a regular season dual meet, both Nathan Smith, their two-time finalist and state champion, was out, and as well was Nick Armstrong. He was also out with an injury at the time.
That's another state qualifier, too, from a
two-time state qualifier, exactly. And Maguanago won it pretty handily. So I would expect Maguanago to beat Falls, but Falls is also very good. Five state qualifiers for the individual tournament this season. And I think that the winner has a very tough matchup in the semifinal where they could face potentially Hudson, the number one team in the state, or Kakana, the defending team state champions, and also the number two ranked team in the state. So either way, Maguanago Falls, whoever wins that, we'll have a very tough semifinal match.
Kakana, the two-time defending state champion, to back up my alma mater there, which has a little bit of a wrestling powerhouse. A shame that those two teams actually have to meet each other in the first round. And I think I teased my column, which is on the Preps Alcove at lakecountrynow.com. You can read that there. It's from last week where I talked about how reseeding just has to happen at some of these state tournaments where you get, and I feel like it's just an idea that's been discussed so much, long overdue. It stinks to me that the two best teams in the state have to meet right away in a quarterfinal. And good for Maguanago, because even though they're probably going to have to bounce back, let's say they win or Falls, the winner of that is going to have to face one of the top two teams in the state right away Friday night. That's too bad. On the bright side, that team just finished wrestling the other best team in the state. That's as vulnerable as they're going to be all year long. And Maguanago, from my estimation, certainly has the firepower to pull off an upset there. So that's going to be an interesting situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
In boys basketball, one game that I know you have your eyes on, I'm actually going to be attending this one myself, is the Sussex-Hamilton-Maguanago game. That'll be Friday night. Big batch of regional semifinal boys basketball games coming up Friday night. Those are two teams that are kind of interesting, and I think pretty similar in that they've had some pretty good ups and downs this year, a little inconsistent. Both teams have been. They both have kind of a marquee player. I know Sussex-Hamilton is Jacob Hartung, and Maguanago has Brandon Howe. Maguanago doesn't rely on Howe to do the scoring quite as much as Hamilton does for Hartung, but really interesting battle. I think that's one of the games I've circled here in the regional final round. I don't know about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Maguanago is a really good team, and I think the 11 seed really doesn't do them justice because earlier in the season they actually beat Arrowhead, who is one of the better teams in the Classic 8. I believe they took second in the Classic 8.
Four seed in that same sectional.
Yeah, exactly. So Maguanago could pull the upset. And I know Hamilton coach Andy Cerrone definitely realizes that Maguanago is a dangerous threat. And you mentioned Brandon Howe. He's a 6'6 junior. I know he's getting a lot of college interest already. And he can really handle the ball. Sometimes he'll bring it up. Act as the point guard. He can shoot from the outside. Jake Lang is also a very good shooter for Maguanago. And you mentioned Jacob Hartung. He is an excellent three-point shooter and very clutch. He hits some big-time shots. And they also have Luke Sem, who is very good from three-point range, and Zach Jasinski, a four-sport athlete, actually. He's a very good point guard and very athletic, obviously, a four-sport athlete.
Second place finisher in the pole vault last year at state track and field.
Yeah, and he was the football kicker and also a key part to the successful soccer team this past season.
In the 8-9 matchup in that same sectional bracket, Kettle Moraine is the ninth seed taking on Menominee Falls. I promised one of my colleagues, Steve Teets, that I'm picking Kettle Moraine in that one. Not only that, that team has hit the skids a little bit at the end of the year, but I love the fact that they've got a stud player in Sean Miller. Nick Fuller really at times was a huge secondary threat, their point guard. key to their defensive situation. I think Kettle Moraine can go and beat that fourth-ranked Sheboygan North team, that top seed. That would be my upset special. I'm playing with house money a little bit. I predicted Arrowhead girls would do well last week, and then they ended up getting to the sectional, beating Tapir, one of the top seeds in their bracket. So I'm going to go ahead and say Kettle Moraine. I've picked them as sort of a sleeper in the tournament all year long. That's a team I really like still.
Yeah, that'll be a really good matchup. I don't want to underrate Falls either, though, because they're actually the 8 seed coming into this, so I guess they would be considered somewhat of a favorite on paper. But they're a very good team, and in the crazy Greater Metro this year, they beat Hamilton twice, which Hamilton finished with a very good seed, with a 6 seed, so they finished higher than Falls. But Bryce McMurtry, he finished with a 13.3 points per game, and sometimes Falls can turn it on and be very dangerous. But, of course, Kettle Moraine, you mentioned Nick Fuller. He's the second highest scorer on that team. And I saw him earlier against McGuanago this season where he put up 30 points. And he can do plenty of damage, as well as Sean Miller.
One of the Saturday games to keep an eye on, Brookfield Central at Marquette. I'm going to talk more about that with Tom Skybosh here in a minute, because Brookfield Central, the lower-seeded team, but they've beaten Marquette twice this year, so you'll have to keep an eye on that. And then, Evan, another one of interest is to see Oconomowoc, the Wisconsin Little Ten champ. First time in 12 years they've won a conference championship, getting a 6th seed in their sectional with a lot of Madison-area teams from the Big 8 Conference. Kind of on paper, looks like those teams maybe banded together and gave preference to their programs over an Oconomowoc team that not a lot of them have seen, I would wager. But it's hard to really classify Oconomowoc. Last year they had a really nice team, very nearly missed a big-time upset against Kenosha Indian Trail in the regional final, and they lost one of their top seniors but brought everybody else back. The Wisconsin Little Ten is not a power conference. Nobody mistakes it for that, so it's hard to really gauge what the accomplishment of going 13-1 in that conference is. But they sure seem better to me than a 6 seed. So I'm curious do you feel like that's still a team that can make some serious noise, even though they didn't get really the layout that might favor them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Oconomowoc was underseeded as a 6 seed. The reason I think they were even seeded 6th is because of that loss to Beaver Dam very late in the season. And that was not a typical loss. Their leading scorer, Zach Clayton, received a technical foul a couple minutes into the game. There's a team rule by Coach Kirk Melton that if a player receives a technical foul, they sit the rest of the game. So Oconomowoc nearly beat Beaver Dam without their top scorer.
And did beat Beaver Dam earlier this year with him. So.
Exactly. So that game would have went a little bit differently. But, you know, having said all that, Oconomowoc is very dangerous as a 6 seed, in my opinion. They could potentially play Madison Memorial in the second round. And who knows? They don't traditionally have a strong playoff history. But that could change. You just never know.
Muskego, the 4 seed in that same sectional. Also a curiosity, of course. They're the Classic 8 Conference champion. And again, they kind of maybe with Madison Memorials. I mean, there's a good team in the Big 8. But you could see where the schools banding together, having seen each other. Sun Prairie, the Veronas of the world, decided that maybe Muskego isn't going to fit into that top 3 construct. So a couple teams that might be playing with something to prove when we get to Friday. Joined now by Sky Skybosh, who covers, among other communities, Brookfield and Wauwatosa for us. But the team I wanted to ask you about is the New Berlin Eisenhower, the boys' basketball team, the number 1 seed in Division 2. Really curious about this last game of the regular season. They had beaten Pewaukee handily the first time. Pewaukee goes to Eisenhower and beats them handily this time. Now, on the one hand, you can say, well, the game didn't mean anything. The placement in the conference was all wrapped up. The seedings were all wrapped up. And on the other hand, you got to be a little alarmed to see the chief competition in that section or that regional just totally come in and win big. How worried are you about the Lions? I mean, we still see them as kind of a state finalist type of team or a state champion type of team. How worried are you about that final outcome?
Well, really, they could almost sleepwalk through their first 2 games. I know Dave Scheidegger just rolled over in his grave. Not in his grave.
Yeah, he's really quite alive. Yeah. No, we're leaving that. That's good.
If he was in his grave, he could roll over for hearing you say that. But they're, the seeded teams that they're going to have to face, they shouldn't have any problems with. They're a very talented team from the point of view. They do everything. You know, if you want to try to stop them inside, Sullivan Kujo, I think, is one of their best players, and he's a junior or sophomore. But anyway, he's very talented inside. Matt Rolofson, when they lost to Bondier in triple overtime, those two guys dominated inside right. against Brown Deer. Plus, they got pick your poison from the outside. They got Kraniger, they got Sirk, who could shoot from the outside, and their best athlete on the team is Jordan Kennedy.
Right.
Just an outstanding athlete. So they've got a lot of talent. Dave can go 8-9 deep. I'd like to think it was that Wednesday game was just one of those things.
Where yeah.
Milwaukee came in. And like you said, it meant something to Milwaukee. It really didn't mean a lot.
To Eisenhower, for sure. So one of the more interesting teams, I think one of the most enigmatic teams all year, I've been doing my round ball rankings, and this team has not been in my top 15, but I would not want to face more than any other team, not in my top 15, the Wauwatosa East Boys team. I feel like that's a team that's got a lot of talent. They got dealt an early blow when Bryce Beekman transferred away this season, but with Javion Green having a nice year, that team is dangerous, man. And I really think that's a squad that can make it to sectional, maybe even further. I mean, what is your take on Tosa East? Are they just inconsistent? Because to me, they're sort of a mystery.
Yeah, that's the big word there. Inconsistent.
Yeah.
When they're the most successful, they not only have their transition game going, but they're most effective when they steal the ball and go in and score. Okay. When they run their half-court offense, that's the kind of key to what kind of game is this going to be. If they can run their half-court offense well, if they can, hit the 10-15-footer, not the three-pointer, the 10-15-footer, if they can do that,
yeah.
They really have a chance to beat anybody because they are a good defensive team. Their problem has been, if they get behind, getting over the hump. And sometimes when they get ahead, they relax a little bit too much.
Sure, sure.
So consistency is a big thing. But, from a talent, once again, Tim can go 8 deep. He brings Blake Kratzer off the bench is one of my favorites. Great outside shooter, tough defender. I think one of the keys to them is Cal Rhody. Cal Rhody, the last time I saw them play against Brookfield East, really did a nice job inside. Cal's about 6'3". He's strong and... because, the thing with Javion, Javion can go outside, he can, go inside depending on, what they're giving him. But they are a very talented team.
One of the bigger Saturday battles that we're kind of looking forward to, Brookfield Central Marquette. Marquette's the higher seed, and they'll host the game, but Brookfield Central has gotten the best of Marquette this year. So, is that something that you think? I mean, do you think they could do it again, I guess?
I don't know if they got the best of Marquette. They split.
Yeah, well, they did beat them once, which is...
Yeah, the second game they dominated. They just dominate them. Central's situation is they can get beat on the boards, and if they get beat on the boards, it's going to be a long night for them.
Mm-hmm.
They have one of the best freshmen that I've seen this year, Gage Malencik. Mm-hmm. It's like this kid's 14 years old, 15. It's hard to believe.
I mean,
he's just so smart. He can take the ball at a hoop. He can shoot the jumper. But the thing that he's been so effective is he's been able to have Rhody, who was their point guard, and move him over to a two guard. And Sammy Rhody's strengths is a three-point shot. So that gives him another threat with Andrew Bergink on that end. So, but the big thing is I think Chris Reisner, okay, if Chris can play a good game inside, and they have another guy who doesn't see as much action, but he's physically a big kid, is Chris Post. And if they could come in, that'll be the key to Marquette, is going to be the rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
Because Marquette is a very athletic team.
Joined now by John Reck, who covers, among many teams, Muskego, which kind of got an interesting seed. They only got the fourth seed in a sectional full of Madison area teams. On paper, kind of looks like the Madison area schools, banded together a little bit and made sure that they got the top seeds, with Madison Memorial getting the three. I don't know if Muskego feels that way. I don't know if they care where their seeds fall, but I mean, for the Classic A Conference champion with only one loss in a pretty tough league, I imagine they felt like they were a little bit slighted, John.
I did get that feeling in talking with Coach Andy Capes, yes. But as he said, as most coaches will say, well, you have to beat everybody anyway to get to state.
Sure.
And they opened with Beloit Memorial, and then they would host Madison East. Muskego's trying to come back from last year when it... had the top seed and were lost in the first round. So Muskego would certainly like to make up for that. And I think Muskego has the team to do that with Caleb Wagner, Tommy Anderson, and Matt Farner, top scorers. Farner's a double-double machine with 17 double-doubles in 22 games this year. So Muskego will be tough.
I know it's easy to remember that they lost that first-round game last year. It got totally upset. I don't even remember. Janesville Craig, I think. Or Parker. I always get those confused. But they were missing a senior starter last year, Mike Vidmar, who I believe was suspended for that game. So that's kind of an easy element to forget. Still not a game they should have lost, but you wonder if that sort of played into how they're perceived this year by the Madison teams. Jumping around to a couple teams in Division II that you cover that could be some upset specials. It's a pretty loaded bracket in Division II, same as on the girls' side. New Berlin Eisenhower is a team to beat in D2. We talked about them a little bit with Tom Skybosh, but and Pewaukee, also very good. But that Greendale team with David Palizos, who's coming off a 45-point game when Greendale racked up 121 points to beat New Berlin West. And Whitnall with Tyler Harrow, who's a sophomore, getting looked at by the University of Wisconsin, among others. I mean, truly one of the best basketball players in the state. Mm-hmm. Those teams could match up against Eisenhower and Pewaukee, respectively, in the regional final. That could be some fireworks, John. I imagine there could be some upsets there.
Could be. Like you said, with Palizos, top scorer, Nate Thompson is a top scorer. Greendale has a lot of firepower. Whitnall with Harrow and Kevion Taylor has a lot of firepower. They both lost to Eisenhower this year. Eisenhower is an extremely balanced team. Upset by Pewaukee in the season finale, and of course Pewaukee is the 2 seed in there.
Right.
So it's kind of a Woodland Conference reunion in the second round.
Greendale did beat Pewaukee at home earlier this year. Pewaukee got even at their place, so some possibility there. Although Pewaukee will match up likely in the second round or in the regional final with Whitnall, so mm-hmm. those are some games to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Any other surprises you see in the tournament? I know you've covered West Allis Hale. They've had some ups and downs this year. Any teams you see that could make some surprise noise in the postseason?
Hale has a tough draw at Milwaukee King.
Yeah, that's
which
tough.
Which is seeded seventh, which is kind of low. Mm-hmm. King is 14-8, 7-5 in the city, but certainly a lot of talent there. I don't know.
Well, last year, West Allis Central made that crazy run mm-hmm. to state, and they were a pretty talented team.
Right.
They'd sort of fallen off the radar, like the Tosa East team that we just talked about with Skybosh.
Mm-hmm.
But, maybe not necessarily as likely this year, but still, I suppose anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. And Stephen's Point, this is nothing new, certainly seems like a very heavy favorite in Division I. I don't know if anybody's going to beat Stephen's Point.
Yeah, I think the question is not whether they win, but the question of will anybody even come close to beating them as we get along, as we get to the state tournament.
Yep.
Joined now by Stephen Teets, who covers North Shore and the Northwest, including Germantown, the 4 consecutive appearances at the state in the state championship game for Germantown. They lost their streak of 3 straight titles last year to Stevens Point, the prohibitive favorite this year, as we just mentioned with John Reck. Tell me a little bit about the Germantown team. Now, they're not seeded first, and they're not necessarily favored to come out of the sectional. Still a lot of firepower. I don't think it would surprise anybody to see them back in Madison, right?
Mark Adams, in his first year with the team, has done a remarkable job. They had that very uncharacteristic streak in late December, early January. We lost 4 out of 5. Adams talked about the lack of defensive intensity, maybe a little bit of lack of cohesion. All that's changed right now. They've won 10 in a row. They're playing with great energy, and they are playing with great cohesion now. They of course revolve around Juwan McLeod, Max Keefe, and Connor Edmonds, but he's gotten so much more out of this team than I ever thought. Guys have come off the bench. New guys like Kyle Clow have played so well. They really do have a focus. They are only the 2 seed, but like you said, I would not be surprised if they come out of this and head back to state for a 5th straight time.
Juwan McLeod, a Northern Iowa recruit, I've maintained, and I think that guy's going to have a great college career. He's undersized as college players go, but that guy can just play, flat out play. He's one of the best in the area for sure. Down in Division III, Brown Deer has its own streak going, 2-time state champs. And again, I mean, they graduated some key pieces, but led by Taurus Adams, that's a team that should be able to get back to state. I mean, they really have the firepower to do it again. I know they lost to Pewaukee. They beat Eisenhower. That was one of their bigger wins of the year, a triple overtime win. And they've just rolled up offense. I mean, they're a 90-point-a-game type of team. Not obviously quite that good overall, but that's sort of what they're capable of. I mean, where do you see them? I mean, do you see them as another state championship team?
I can easily see them. Waupun just lost its first game of the year. They are on the other side of the bracket at 21-1. But this has been a remarkable job by Coach Kelly Appleby. They lost their entire guard line, plus the great forward, Zach Bond. They built around Tarris Adams and Craig Shimmons, who is essentially their sixth man. But he's gotten so much mileage out of a series of young, inexperienced guards. They are still doing what they always do, press like crazy, turn you over, and get up the court as fast as you can. Everybody's just played a role. Aside from those two players, no one's really stuck out here. But it's been a remarkable job. They beat Eisenhower in that game just less about a week after a fiasco against Pewaukee, a near fiasco against Pewaukee at home, and then they have not slowed down since. Just a fun team to watch with great intensity. And Adams is playing like an All-State player right now. He's just really taking that team upon his shoulders.
Going to be a great race for our All-Suburban Boys Player of the Year. A lot of the players we just talked about: Taurus Adams of Brown Deer, Germantown's Jawan McLeod, David Palizos of Greendale, Tyler Harrow of Whitnall. I'll throw in Caleb Wagner from Muskego as well. Going to be a really tough race, really interesting to watch down the stretch. So we talked a little bit team wrestling at the very beginning of that conversation with Evan Frank. JP Gadorin, you may be going to team wrestling.
Yeah, the WIA is like super smart and awesome in that they moved wrestling from 6 p.m. Saturday to 3 p.m.,
right,
which coincides beautifully with the exact time of the boys' hockey finals.
Awesome.
So assuming that teams that I cover are in the finals of both of them, I have to pick one instead of covering both.
I would actually wager that is a smart move.
Good job, good effort.
Oh, I see. You are happy with that.
No, good job. No, I think it's immensely dumb.
Oh, I don't think it's dumb because most people care about basketball games. So now they can see the state wrestling and still come back to home and watch some basketball at 7 o'clock at night.
Most TV stations have one employee that they're sending out.
Well,
on
that's
Saturday.
Not their problem. Their problem is they're thinking about the fans, JP, and the athletes. They're not thinking about you or me.
They did not move wrestling to accommodate basketball.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what they did.
So,
but
I
have
to
have a Milwaukee area team or a Fox Valley area team in the final.
Yeah, and wrestling, I feel like I'm pretty much going to be there.
That's probably going to happen.
Wrestling has, I think, 6 Division I teams, 1 Division II, and 1 Division III team in the tournament. So I'm probably going to be covering wrestling. Then there's also girls hockey as well. University school is playing there, so at least in the semifinals. So I'll be prepping it up on Saturday.
Interesting topic that harkens back to my column at the Preps Alcove at LakeCountryNow.com from a couple weeks ago, where I talked about reseeding at the state tournament, how the idea is long overdue. Wrestling is a perfect example. You got the two best teams in the state. One team you cover, Kakana and Hudson, they're facing in a state quarterfinal. Absolutely should not be meeting in a state quarterfinal. They are the two best teams in the state, and honestly, that's not even up for debate. That's inarguable. And they're going to meet in the quarterfinal. And then not only that, but the semifinals are later Friday night, so they would have to face Kakana or Hudson, the other best team in the state, and then wrestle another match. That's
Which,
not
in,
fair.
Okay, but in wrestling, you can do that.
You can.
Because that's only two wrestling matches.
And you get a pretty good break in between. Yeah. I get that. But it still stinks that you have to face off with the best team in the state just to get to a match later that night against a pretty qualified team. In this case, it'll either be Menominee Falls or Maguanago. Maguanago is number 4 in the state, have a lot of depth. They're not going to be a pushover for one of those top teams.
I get that it's probably nice to reseed them, but at some point you have to beat all of them. And that's not to say, I'm not arguing in favor of keeping it because, well, you'll have to beat Hudson eventually, you might as well beat them now. That's not my argument. My argument there is, well, what if they faced somebody, I don't know, what if they faced Appleton West and they were a really good team in the sectionals?
Sure.
You know,
okay.
Like how often do you reseed it? I'm thinking about football as well with that Kimberly Homestead from 2 years ago, I think it was, where those were the two best teams in the state, and they had to meet in, I think, the semifinals. So it's like, when do you reseed them?
Yeah.
I mean, I get that, okay, state tournament is a pretty good place to reseed because everything resets. But I think you could almost do it every round if you really wanted to get the best matchups.
I think I agree with that to a degree. I can live with the geography of regionals and sectionals, even if that means the 5 best teams in the state are all competing against each other. I can live with that as a logistics argument. And in football, it's sort of a totally different animal with only the championship game being played in Madison. That's a little bit harder to do in terms of a reseed concept. I just think the state tournament's the right place to draw the line. Like you said, everybody's going to be in the same venue. There's no concern about geography or travel times or scheduling. Everybody's there. Their resumes are on the table. It's really, really easy to just sit down and
decide. I think you should do it in the semifinals then.
In the which
semifinals? Wrestling semifinals.
There is no semifinal. Oh, you're saying wait.
Yeah. No. I'm purely doing this just to make you mad.
Okay.
Just, if you want to reseed all the teams that qualified for the state tournament,
yeah.
I disagree. Place them based on sectionals, have them wrestle their quarterfinals, and then reseed them.
Okay.
Since you picked your arbitrary quarterfinal spot to reseed them.
When you're going back-to-back. Now, my argument with this, by the way, and I don't want to spend too much more time on this. My argument
why?
Is...
Why? This is so fun.
You brought up an argument that is typically the response, not necessarily yours, but, well, you got to beat everybody anyway.
Yeah.
Totally true. Totally agree with that. However, you do get a trophy for taking silver, for taking second place.
And if you're the second best team...
Hudson, if they lose to Kakana, or vice versa, should have at least a chance to get a second place trophy. I get that upsets happen. In fact, that's the best part of what we do. So,
yeah.
But if it's not an earned upset, what's the point? If it's that the two best teams in the state were in one semifinal of boys basketball, and two teams that got lucky breaks and wound up as six seeds, and they're meeting in a semifinal... It's not awesome when that team gets to the final. That's not an earned outcome.
And wrestling when, let's say that, so Kakana takes care of Hudson or whatever, and then they face somebody like a Kenosha Bradford who's 19-7, if that ends up being like a blowout meet, that's not very fun.
No,
wrestling is not very fun when the final score is 45-6.
It's over with four matches to go, and it's literally mathematically clinched, and you're watching wrestling.
So, not very fun.
Yeah. But as far as basketball this weekend, I know you may not get out to a game, but anything that jumped out at you when you were looking at the brackets?
I will not be getting to a game. We will be broadcasting, I think, Friday and Saturday night.
That's true.
So there are some fallbacks for people. I remember that there are some interesting city conference potential matchups. Like I saw, I think Riverside might play King.
That's possible, I think.
Yeah, that would be awesome to see some rematches like that.
Yeah, and I'm going to go see Hamilton, Menominee Falls, some very interesting matchups, mostly on Saturday. Friday there's some good games. It's just that's as the regional opener level, you get more mismatches than not. So I think on your airwaves, it's going to be Menominee Falls, Kettle Moraine. That's an 8-9 matchup. That's going to be a really good game.
Beautiful.
So there's a few out there that certainly should be fun, and Saturday games are going to be really good, especially there's a girls sectional finals, which will mean trips to state for the teams that win.
So, beautiful.
Anything else going on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel this week? I'm on the round table on Wednesday. That's something.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah.
You can catch it Thursday morning, too, if you miss it Wednesday night.
Yep.
If you're too busy watching those Badgers take down all six Minnesota Golden Gophers that are playing.
And you know what? Minnesota, that's just the type of game where they would end up not blowing them out. Because, I don't know.
It could happen.
Badgers should win by 30.
Anything can happen on a raised floor.
That's
anything can happen on a raised floor.
Including people falling off said raised floor and getting hurt. But let's do it because it's fun.
I interviewed Dick Bennett over the weekend, so that was fun. The 1993-1994 Green Bay Phoenix team went into the Phoenix Hall of Fame.
Okay.
So I got to sit down with Dick Bennett.
That's actually really cool.
And Jeff Zavada. And John Martinez, and we have a copy of that broadcast because we're partners with Green Bay, so we get to air some old games. I watched the first 5 minutes of that game are fascinating.
Really?
Because it's 1994 graphics. The game is in, I think, Ogden, Utah, the home of Weber State.
Yes.
It was really funny to watch. And then a split screen with Jason Kidd and Gary Gresh.
Here's the guy who's going to shut down Jason
really,
Kidd.
Really, really cool. So,
yeah.
So that story is airing now on Sports Weekly. Sam Decker came back to Milwaukee. That's on Sports Weekly. Also, Marquette freshman is dominating in basketball. Not Henry Ellenson.
Nope.
Alizea Blockton, Big East freshman of the year, was just announced today, which coincides nicely with my feature on her that ran yesterday.
I kind of tried to stump for her last year when she was on our all-suburban team, how a lot of people were focused in the state of Wisconsin in girls basketball on Arike Ogunbowale, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Three-time Gatorade Player of the Year in Wisconsin from DSHA. She plays for Notre Dame. She contributes to Notre Dame, who's one of the best teams in the country. Which is cool. But Alizea Blockton was really, 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 really good, too. Now she's averaging close to a double-double as a freshman for Marquette. She was only second team all Big East, which is... nope. She should have been first team. But very impressive freshman season for
her.
Blockton.
She has 11 double-doubles on the season, which leads the Big East. Not leads Big East freshman, leads all of the Big East.
That's correct.
She holds the Marquette scoring record for a freshman, and she now holds the Big East scoring record for a freshman.
She's amazing.
So, awesome stuff. And the Marquette women had eight newcomers on their roster, eight freshmen.
Right.
They're actually pretty good.
Yeah, I know.
Like, we were...
They're middle of the pack team. They're a 500 team.
Yeah. preseason, we were talking about them being like one of the worst ever. They're pretty good. So
I think Natasha Heideman made the all-rookie team, all-freshman team as well. So
she did.
And I think Michaela Yentz
from Sun Prairie,
most improved player in the Big East. So there's some lot to like if you're a women's basketball fan, Marquette, especially because they play at the Al McGuire Center, which is an awesome venue to
Agreed.
See basketball. You
Super
should check
Tuesday.
Them out. Great family opportunity. Super Tuesday. I can't believe you rolled that out just now. We were just talking about that.
And what else was I gonna say? And then Green Bay won their 18th consecutive Horizon League women's title.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful. Always
Wisconsin
Green Bay.
Women. Not so much.
Not so much. They are not winning a lot of basketball games, but you can catch up on every Wisconsinite in the in NCAA men's basketball, certainly, if you check out my Preps Alcove column from last week, the Sconnies of March, as championship week dawns on us. Take a look at the players who are going to play to try to get into the big dance. Also on the website, mycommunitynow.com/roundball, the roundball rankings. You can find updates on local players, both men and women, who are playing on the Division I level. Taylor Grandijan of Florida Gulf Coast comes to mind. They'll be going dancing.
Nice.
UWGB's got a lot of kids who are going to go dancing. So
nice.
A lot of kids headed to the NCAA tournament from the home state.
Beautiful. Well, thanks, buddy. You did great today. I'll keep you on for next week.
You did
week.
Too, JP. I might allow you to come back next week as well. It's going to be a good thing.
Look at that partnership, huh?
That's great.
Beautiful.
We'll have to talk some boys hoops and sectionals and girls state next week, right?
Oh, my goodness. See you there.
We're here.
See you there.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye, friends.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.